Hi, everybody. We're so excited to have you here today for our last webinar of 2018. And today we're going to be talking about investing strategically in digital resources. My name is Shannon McClintock-Miller, and I serve as the Future Ready Librarian spokesperson and also the District Teacher Librarian at the Winnetka Community School in Iowa. You can find me on Twitter, and I'll be tweeting during this too and watching what everybody else is talking about and saying. And if you have any questions, and you can also find me at my blog and my email. And today I'm really excited because I get to have three of my friends and colleagues and people that I really respect and admire with me today. And so I'm going to go ahead and first let my friend Bill Bass introduce himself.
Hi everyone. My name is Bill Bass. I am a innovation coordinator, responsible for innovation and our library program at the Parkway School District in St. Louis, Missouri.
Thank you, Bill. And go ahead, Kim, and go ahead and introduce yourself too.
Okay, and I too work with Bill in Parkway in St. Louis, and I am a library support specialist working with Future Ready librarians and our program guidelines in leadership and community connection and partnership.
Great. Yeah, you guys are very lucky to work together. So I'm glad that you're here today. And
Thank
Fran,
you.
go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, everybody. My name is Fran Glick. I'm the coordinator of Library Media Programs and Digital Resources in Baltimore County Public Schools in Baltimore, Maryland.
Thank you, Fran, for being with us too. And during also the webinar, and always you can find them at their Twitter names too on the bottom. They're great people to follow too. And as I said earlier, if you have any questions or you want to make a comment or you have something to share, please post it on the Future Ready Libs hashtag. And this is a conversation that's going on all the time. It's a great one to follow. And I also just wanted to put this up too, because as we're following Future Ready Libs, also the Future Ready hashtag is another one that a lot of us include, and even just to follow the conversation that's happening, not just within libraries, but within Future Ready schools as well. Today, we're going to talk about the last wedge. We've went through all of these now in the last 2 years of our webinar series, and we're going to talk about what we do as librarians when it comes to that budget and resources wedge of Future Ready schools. So I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to our guests who are going to tell us all kinds of great things when it comes to investing strategically in digital resources.
So as we get started here, one of the things that I think about a lot when we talk about investing in digital resources is that of a digital content strategy and just the way that we use digital content in our schools. So as we have, as in Parkway, as Kim and I have been thinking about how we invest strategically and how we're strategic about those things, one of the biggest things that we have started to have broader conversations about as an organization is just this idea of what a digital content strategy is. Because we recognize that more and more content is coming into our district, and more content is responsible for the work that we are doing, right? That's where kids are accessing content. It's not that they are not accessing it in physical spaces, but it's really around how do we access digital content in meaningful ways, and how do we have a strategy around that? So it's not just our library content, but it is the content that comes through our curriculum department and through the work of the other coordinators in my district. It's the other coordinators, as well as the ways that we really focus our efforts around that. And that's why, as we think about, at least in Parkway, as we think about that strategy and that investment that we have in digital resources, we have to recognize that it's not just the library. And that's really what I want to focus on here as we move on to our next slide. The next piece that goes along with this is the role of digital content. And when we look at the role of digital content in our schools, we really, in Parkway, we have three different ways that we think about this, or at least three main ways that we think about this. The first one is instructional use. And that's really around how do we want to use the content? Where do we want that content to live? And how are we going to access it? So what is the instructional use? What is the type of, what do we want our kids to do and what do we want them to learn? So that's a big part of that. The second piece that comes with the role of digital content in our schools as we think about it is that student use. So one of the biggest things is, yes, we have digital content, and that digital content goes from kindergarten through 12th grade. However, different products are targeted towards different grade levels. And that's obviously not a secret, but how are we going to support content for those different grade levels, and how are they going to access it? That's really that key point, is what are the ways that our kids are going to access those, that for their learning needs, right? So the other part of that student use is just, are the kids going to find the content engaging? Is it something that is going to enhance their experience? One of the things that we talk about a lot is, okay, there are lots of ways that we can get content to kids, but what's as important is whether or not the kids will actually access that content, right? Because it's great. One of the great equalizers of technology is being able to access this content from anywhere and using any type of device. And that's a really important piece that comes with that, is that technology allows for that access to occur. The last piece that we think about when we talk about the role of digital content is really this idea of teacher engagement. And so how do teachers interact with that digital content? How do they access it, both library content and outside of the library? So when we think about, one of the things that we do in Parkway is we have a partnership with our public library that gives kids access to different content through the library. Now, that's amazing and that's great, except that if teachers aren't going to use it and the kids aren't going to access it, then it's just a system that isn't actually benefiting our kids. And that's really where we are spending our time thinking about how we are investing strategically. To a great extent, it is about the library, but it's about more than just the library, because it's about how we find ways to interject digital content into our schools and into our classrooms and get that in front of kids. So I want to turn this over to Kim and give her an opportunity to talk about, on that next slide, that the different types of content that we talk about in Parkway.
So as we think about digital content type, it's very closely related to the Advocates for Student Privacy. So all of these edges of the wedges are so interconnected that if we're not talking about the data and privacy in conjunction with the digital content type, we're doing a disservice to our kids. Because the data and privacy, we need to check before we go any further. You know, is it appropriate for all users? Is there parental consent needed for students that are 13 or 18 years of age? You know, and what type of data is being collected? I think those are things that we haven't really not paid attention to, but we haven't focused on before selecting that digital content. So once we find that appropriate, I think we can go into, you know, the next phase, like what is the curriculum going to look like? You know, is it cross-curricular? Does it have to do with direct instruction? Will it support inquiry-based learning experiences or game-based learning? So thinking about those in terms of curriculum, I think, is one of the things we need to ask ourselves. But then moving into scope, can the content be customized for personalized learning, differentiation, individualized learning? Because all school districts and communities do different things. So how do we support all of those different areas? You know, and thinking about scope, you know, does the product support student growth? And what is that return on investment? So as they look at the standard alignment, you know, not only standards, does it have competencies? Is it related to that? Or their suggested lessons? I know as we look at different products and things like that, one of the things that gets me excited about talking to librarians is if they have suggestions for lessons for K-2, 3-5, et cetera. And then thinking about that report customization for the teachers. you know, does the platform support us running different types of reports so that we can address school and student needs? And then also thinking about all those things that relates back to that scope. Does it provide data points to evaluate its use? You know, what are the metrics that are available? So I think these are things that we think about in terms of, you know, strategically selecting digital content, but that also thinking about, you know, in the end, what is the subscription base? Is it a one-time purchase? You know, what are the terms of renewal? And is it sustainable? So thinking about those and asking yourself those questions, I think helps us decide what kind of digital content fits our community as a whole. So then as we think about that, we then have to move in with technology, where Bill will talk about that piece on the next slide.
Thanks, Kim. With all the pieces, you know, whether it is our digital content strategy or the content type, one of the main drivers behind this is whether or not we have the access to the digital content. That is absolutely a significant piece, but it's also important to understand that access comes with the need for devices for kids, or for that, whether that is school provided devices or their own devices. So a few of the things that we think about when we think about the technology and the ways that technology enhances the experience. First of all, we recognize that authentication is important. Regardless of what the digital content is, most of the time there's a sign-on. Now that's obviously not true in all cases, but most of the time there is a sign-on. And so if the platform doesn't support a single sign-on using an authentication method that we already have in our district, well, that's a barrier to entry for our kids. And that's one of those pieces that we want to be sure that when we give them access to the content, that they can actually access it. So that single sign-on, that authentication with single sign-on, is a really important piece for us. Another piece that is super important for us is that it is device agnostic. We have a variety of different types of devices in our district, whether that's Chromebooks, we have some iPads, we have tablets, and we have kids who are coming in with all of their phones, and every make and model of phone that is available, they have it. And so that, if they can't access it because it is only available on an iPhone or only available through Android, that's a barrier to entry for our students. And honestly, at this point, if it's not device agnostic, we take a really hard look at it and we try to find alternatives, because products and content that we have to have a specific device for aren't something that is sustainable for us in the long run, nor something that we want to give kids access to, because we want them to be able to access it anytime, anywhere, and without a device that we have to provide for them. We want them to be able to basically use whatever that content is, wherever they are. We also want to talk about equitable access in terms of technology. And when we talk about equitable access, it's not just access to devices. I mean, that's certainly part of it. But we also have to think about the classroom conditions. And so those classroom conditions, sometimes that's just Wi-Fi, right? That's just giving having wireless available for them. In other cases, it's that we need to be able to, in some kids, to meet IEPs or specific learning plans that they have, we need to be able to print out some of that content, because that becomes an important piece in order for us to reach that student. And that's the equity piece. The equitable access really comes down to us wanting to reach all kids and not just the kids who happen to have access. And that becomes a more important piece. And technology, while it is giving us that, we recognize that not every kid has internet access at home. We recognize that there are lots of families that don't have devices. And so we recognize that through that, we need to be able to maybe download that content in different ways. So we really need to really think about what conditions we need to create in order to make sure that that kids can access those things through the technology. Otherwise, again, it's access without access is really how we like to think of that. And the last piece of the technology is really about sustainability. And it's that scope it's the scope of how much technology and how much content can we actually provide. There are budgetary restraints. There are things that we have to think about beyond just, we can't subscribe to every service and we can't give our kids access to everything that we want to. So we have to choose wisely. And that's where that strategic investment comes in. I really like this wedge because what it does is it forces us to think about what is going to stand the test of time, what is going to provide the access that we need, and what is going to give our students the things that they need, and equally important, what's going to give our teachers the content and things that they need to reach their students regardless of where they are in their learning path. And so with that, I think that technology is an important piece of that, but as Kim's about to talk about on our next slide, it's that professional development that really brings in and makes the case for us in the long term.
So yes, with the professional development, the questions that are on this slide, those questions help us determine the digital content selection in terms of professional development. So if we look at, are there any barriers to entry? You know, like Bill was talking about, does the platform seem to be intuitive? Are educators able to integrate and transform lessons with ease? Those questions will help us to think about what kind of develop is needed for the librarians to push this content out and be usable in relation to the content type and the technology use. So as part of our development in the district, we take, I have a future ready librarian class inside of Schoology. And the first thing that we do is we reflect on those questions about content type and technology in either things that they're considering to purchase or things that they've already purchased and maybe they want to rethink that. So that's kind of where we start. And then moving through the course, we look at how can they transfer those thoughts about the digital content to other edges of the wedge? You know, like thinking about students as creators, building instructional partnerships, you know, though, and that equitable access. Those are important pieces to also tie to because, like I said, most of these pieces, all those wedges are tied together. And the more that we can use those and use the vocabulary around that, I think that'll help us in our decision with digital content. But we also went through a program evaluation. And in that, we had a piece that identified our responsiveness to community. And that responsiveness to community meant that we have a flexible use of the budget to meet school needs. Now, digital content is a part of that, but there's also different pieces to that budget, like makerspace and furniture and things like that. And how can we, you know, strategically make this the hub of the school, so to speak. And then once they've kind of looked at those, once they've transferred to the wedge pieces, then we have them consider all the places that they have funding, because they do have a lot of places where the funding comes in. And with that, can they take that funding and that transfer and that reflection and create some sort of visual proposal that makes sense to, or helps them to explain how they would flexibly implement the funding so that it leverages an understanding of school and community needs. And that was a huge part of our program evaluation, in addition to thinking about the future ready elements that are necessary for programming services. So thinking about those three, or I guess several pieces, the content strategy, the content type, and the professional development, and the technology pieces, and also the role, all of those are what make that edge of the wedge as we have seen it so far. So thinking about that, Fran is going to share more with us on a district and school perspective.
Thanks, Kim. I have the opportunity to speak to two parts of how we approach this work here in BCPS. And just to set a little bit of context, I think it's important just to share what our district profile looks like right now. So we have 114,000 students, and all of our students in grades 1 to 12 have access to a device. Our secondary students take their devices home. So that work obviously took years to accomplish. But as of today, we are sort of at that goal place in all of our students having access to their own device for learning. We have used that opportunity to think very specifically over the years as the rollout was happening about what we've been subscribing to, what kinds of content and tools are available for teachers and students and families. And as Bill mentioned, equity is really important to us. And so we've always had pride in being able to provide digital content for all of our students. What we've been able to do because our students have devices is continue to look very carefully. The language of this wedge talks about understanding the school and community needs. And so for us, from a district perspective, that's looking at school campuses, but that's also looking at our community of BCPS as a whole and thinking about what do our teachers need to teach in classrooms where students have access to a device for learning? What do our parents need? What do our students need in order to access content that's differentiated? So we have to think about all of those things from the district perspective. And then I'm also going to share some of the work that we've been doing at this school level and ways that we really think about what that investment looks like for a building-based professional. So in our next slide, we talk about how we think about all of this from the district perspective. So we always begin with the student in mind. We have to think about what are the learning needs of a student, and how can we as a school system make sure that we're providing resources for our students from K to 12? And very closely aligned to that work around thinking about our students is working with our colleagues in curriculum and instruction and making sure that we're working with content specialists to look at digital tools and resources that support the standards of multidisciplinary content, making sure that we're looking at tools that our curriculum partners want to subscribe to, making sure that our students have access to resources that will allow them to be learners independently that dovetails in with the content. And that collaboration that happens at the district level has been really important in helping us make sure that we have tools that are accessible for students and support all content areas. We, like many school systems, have a learning management system, and we have a digital ecosystem. We've worked to make sure that our students sign on one time and they are at that point, they have access to all of the content. We want to make sure that whenever possible, through the way that our teachers work inside the learning management system, that the content is portable. So it can come out of the container that it belongs in, or the tool is accessible through the platform that teachers are using as part of their instructional design. And so that's been an important work. The strategy there is to work with vendor partners and make sure that we're all on the same page about what access means and how we use it inside of our ecosystem. Accessibility is a key factor in making sure that our students have access. If they have a disability, if they're a second language learner, that there's translation tools and a variety of ways for students to access the resources, that it's not limited to one modality for students. That means making sure that we have read aloud functions and translation tools and ways to download content in case a student goes home and doesn't have access to the internet, but is still able to access content that they need for their learning. Student data privacy has been a significant element of our work here in BCPS. Our vendor partners sign data privacy agreements because it's really important to us that we're clear about how we protect our students, and that our vendor partners are clear about what it means to have that relationship with us. Cost is, of course, always a factor. There's limited resources, and that means that the strategy means looking very carefully at what we're spending, that we're covering all the bases that we need to spend with the limited resources that we have. We monitor that return on investment. We look at usage statistics every year and do detailed analysis of what's getting used. We certainly can't afford to invest in tools that aren't being used as heavily. Even with the work that we do to leverage them, we have to look really carefully at what usage looks like. We're fortunate here in Maryland. There are 24 school systems in the state of Maryland, and we all partner together as part of the MDK-12 Digital Library Consortium. And what that means in Maryland is that we negotiate our pricing together. So as a state, our vendors are obligated to charge one price for each LEA. And obviously, there's nuances within that, but what that means fundamentally is that there aren't side negotiations happening. They negotiate with us. We work together to select and evaluate resources so we have that shared investment. To be part of MDK-12, every LEA subscribes to one anchor database. And then there are many offerings and dependent upon budgets and size and all of the considerations that go into making these selections, school systems are able to make choices from that MDK-12 consortium pricing list. In Baltimore County, we have an incredible partnership with Baltimore County Public Library, and all of our students have access to all of the digital content at BCPL using their student IDs. So our student data information is fed into the Polaris system, which is the system that BCPL uses for their OPAC. And so our students can get access to all of the digital content at our public libraries from school or from home. And that has been an incredible way for us to share resources that we don't subscribe to here at the district level, but that our public library partners do. And we also, as a benefit of that partnership, every branch, public library branch, has a school liaison that works with the schools in their area. And so we've had incredible work happening with collaborations around co-teaching experiences, public librarians coming into schools, working with students, helping them learn how to navigate the digital content on the public library side. It's just been an incredible, continues to be an incredible partnership that we benefit from. At the school level, I get the opportunity to really help our school-based staff do their best work and think very strategically about their investment. And when I was thinking about the word investment, I was thinking, you know, those of us at the district level often think of the financial side when we talk about an investment. But the investment of time and attention is really often what's happening at the school level, because the resources are available to them without them having to necessarily worry about cost and all of those things. So the first thing I want to talk about at the school level is, from the library perspective, is the collection development analysis. Every year, our school libraries complete a really detailed collection development analysis. And they look very specifically at the content that they have. Obviously, print resources, but non-print resources too, specifically ebooks, play into that analysis. And they think very strategically about how they're using the resources and ways that they can better enhance the ability to market those resources to their colleagues. So that plays into really instructional practice. Because we've been in the midst of this teaching and learning transformation for the past 5 years, we've really changed what our classrooms look like. And that positions our library media specialists to be incredible instructional partners to their colleagues, that, you know, they can share that there's an ebook that's just the right tool for that lesson, and they can model and demonstrate that teachers can project ebook content and teach right from the resource itself. And that's equally true of access to other digital content that we have. We think about at the school level, you know, our strategies have to be pretty significant. People are busy, time is tight, teachers are invested in, you know, the curriculum demands in their classrooms. And so those strategies have to really think about, you know, how can I be that best instructional partner? How can I show you the resources that we have? How can I be a shoulder partner with you and help you understand the benefit of using this tool in your instruction? I think also about how when we want our library media specialists to market their resources, we've done some really interesting work. And, you know, there's lots of great stuff on Twitter and lots of other places in Future Ready Librarians Facebook group about the best way to market ebooks. They don't take up physical space. So how can we make sure that our students know that they have access to all of that ebook content? In the Mid-Atlantic, we're in winter now. And so we had a snow day a couple of weeks ago, and I saw tweets that just warmed my heart from my library media specialists reminding kids that, hey, it's a snow day, but you can read a book because we have all of these ebooks available in our library platform. And then at the school level, we have professional learning support. We have we call them a stat teacher, but they're an instructional coach in every building. And so we work to make sure that there's a strong partnership between the school librarian and the professional development teacher. So they're equally aware when they're sitting in grade level planning meetings, when they're in conversations and coaching other teachers, that they have an equal awareness of the digital content that's available so that they can make those suggestions as teachers are planning for instruction or as they're modeling instructional practice for teachers. They have an awareness of the resources and tools that are available. We also, you know, the work of professional learning and supporting the community is an incredible part of making sure that we're really investing. So we invest in professional learning. In our collection development, we worked really hard with the school library media specialists to make sure that they understand how significant the work is and their best ways to go about doing that incredible work of building high quality collections. We've worked on what our instructional partnerships need to look like. So those best ways to design co-teaching experiences with other staff to make sure that when we're writing lesson plans, that we're including digital content, we're including instructional tools so that students have the opportunity to access the kinds of information sources that they need, but then turn those into products of their choice using the variety of tools that we have. One of the things that Bill was talking about is sort of that overwhelming sense, and I can't tell what slide we're on, but maybe we can go to the next one, is the incredible amount of things that are out there for teachers to use. And how do we best support teachers in knowing what the right tool for the right job is, whether it's worthwhile in our case, whether it violates anything about student data privacy. And so we have a whole page for all of our teachers and staff that looks at it identifies information about every, and it's public. So I can tweet it out so everybody can take advantage of the work that we've done. But it looks at describing what the tool is. We've used a controlled vocabulary, so we tag what it's for. We talk about what it means in instruction and how to best use it in instruction. So we have those standalone anytime learning resources for teachers. So if they're home, if they see something, hear from a colleague that they're using content or a tool that they're unfamiliar with, they have those anytime learning supports, which we think have really helped our teachers have the ability to continue to revisit the content in order to get what they need. Obviously, we do plenty of face-to-face professional learning too, but when you're planning that lesson at 10:30 at night, you may not have anybody to talk to, and so you need those kinds of resources too. And then one of the things that really I think helps us from a district perspective, but also from the school perspective, is our curriculum writing collaborations. In Baltimore County, we write our own curriculum, and every summer we bring teams of teachers together to write curriculum. And at the district level, we work with our content colleagues to make sure that before that work begins, they understand what kinds of resources they have access to. And then we make sure our curriculum writers are aware of what those integrations can look like and how they function. And then what happens is, as teachers are teaching the written curriculum that includes access to digital content and tools, it's a way for them to recognize that, hey, you know, when I need to personalize this experience for a student, I have a model in the instruction that's been designed for me in our curriculum, and then they get introduced to tools and resources that they can use in other content areas. And they have the ability to recognize that that tool may have a secondary use or another use for them in their classroom. Thank you.
All right. So with that, so thank you, Fran. Thank you, Kim. We have a number of questions that have come through, and I mean, truly, it's not a number; it's a lot. So we only have time for a few. So really sorry that we can't answer everything. We will try to. We are all online people, and we are all also sharers. So if you contact us on Twitter or something like that, I confidently can say that we all will respond with something and help you out as we can. So the first question that I have, I'm going to throw to Kim. And basically, Kim, one of the things that was kind of a theme in the questions that I saw was about balance between e-materials and print materials, and how do we advocate for libraries when there's so much available for us? And, you know, and then we have the internet too, that has, you know, presumably a lot of like free content available. So how do we go about advocating for our libraries and for the content that we have in those libraries?
Well, I think with advocacy in the library, I think it's about becoming the face of those resources that are available, and you know, getting out there and sharing what it is that you have in relation to them. So content is very personal these days. It, you know, you have student to student, you have different relationships, student to teachers, you know, teachers to librarians. So thinking about all those different pieces is how you're going to market those digital content, you know. So one of our librarians, you know, she will buy a certain product that she knows is going to go with the curriculum, and then go have her 5 minutes of harassment, as she calls it, in the morning before school. So she just drops in, she says, "You would not believe what I have to support this. If you want to come see it, you know, come see me, whether it is print or digital." You know, and we really push, you know, that, you know, people might think that the newsletter piece is dead, but not so much. You know, pushing those resources out, whether it's in a newsletter or whether it's in a s'more flyer, those sorts of things, and getting it out there and putting it where they'll find it is probably one of the most important things in that, you know. And I think in the last couple of years, you know, using the table cubes and the library menus of what services and things we have to offer has really helped our librarians become the face of both digital and print content.
Thank you so much for that. Another question that I'm actually going to give to Fran. Fran, there are lots of, one of the themes that I see across all these questions, it has to do with budgeting and the way that we kind of at the district level, as you think about budget and as you frame that, can you just talk a little bit about how you prioritize between digital materials and print materials, especially when there's, like, budgets are not limitless, right? We all have restraints. And so if you can just kind of give us a little insight as to how you approach that in your work.
Sure. I'm gonna start at the school level, and then I'll speak a little bit about the district. At the school level, once we recognized that we were on the path towards a one-to-one implementation, we began to shift our collection development practice and made the recommendation that every year, 20% of a school library's purchasing should be ebook content. And that when our school library media specialists go to purchase ebook content, they're attentive to, you know, what are the novels that are being read in the curriculum? What are the unlimited nonfiction texts that I'm going to be able to specifically bring to my content partner in another subject? And so it's not only making that intentional 20% division, but also being very specific about what that is. And so that not only are we just saying, just spend this much on that, but there's a reason and there's a strategy behind why to do it. At the district level, there are a lot of needs to fill. And it's difficult, I think, to work without a strategy, because if we're not attentive to everyone, we're leaving someone behind. And so I think that's the work at the district level, is to make sure that we're able to say, are we meeting everyone's needs? And I'll give you a more specific example without saying a product name. A few years ago, we recognized that we were underserving our emergent reader community and with digital content. And really, I mean, there hadn't been a lot developed for them. And fortunately, now there's more. And so it was really important for us to say, okay, you know, we have all of these things for the high school students. We need to shift a little bit and make sure that we're meeting the needs of our youngest learners and teaching them those beginning foundational steps around information literacy, which is accessing the content.
Thank you, Fran. I appreciate that. We're gonna take one more question, and this is there's another theme that came through that was really about prioritizing. Like we gave you a lot of information today. We gave you a lot of things to consider and approaches to consider. But one of the things that I think is equally important is recognizing that you can't do everything, right? And so you do have to prioritize. There are only so many dollars. There, you have to have a hierarchy to a certain extent of the considerations that you have. So for instance, one of the things that we absolutely believe in Parkway is that one of our biggest priorities is that access. And if it's not cross-compatible, if whatever the digital tool is isn't cross-compatible, really, we're probably not going to go with that content. Because one of the things that we truly believe is that we should be able to give our students access anywhere. So one of the very first thing is we evaluate digital content, the very first thing we look at really is what kind of access our kids have, and is it only relegated to a iOS device or an Android device, or really is it web-based that you can access it from anything? If we can't access it from anything, we're probably not going to do that. So that's the first one. You know, the single sign-on is another piece that we think is super important, because that just breaks down the barriers. And so we kind of look at it rather than look at it in terms of here are our priorities. We look at it in terms of here are the barriers we want to break down based on this content, and then we prioritize how we look at that content based on those barriers that we want to remove. So I wouldn't say that there is one thing that is the most important, as is the highest priority. I think that it is a variety of things that we have to really consider in order to make meaningful decisions and intentional decisions around the type of content, not that just we provide our students, but that we allow providers to have access to our students, right? And so I think it's, you kind of have to think about it in very broad, with a very broad lens, and then drill down into the really important critical things that we have to think about. So take all of those things that we talked about and choose the ones that are best for your community at that point in time, because that is how you're going to serve your students and your community best overall and in the long run. So with that, I want to turn it back over to Shannon to kind of close us down and give us some words of wisdom as we.
Okay, thank you guys so much. You're all so great, and your stories just really inspire me too as we look even at our community. And I'm in a small district in Iowa of about 800 kids in our entire district, so a lot different than what all of you serve, but still, you know, the same type of things that we think about. And it's really exciting, you know, looking at, we're a one-to-one school, and looking at technology and the resources we use, not just within our district, but within our state too. So I have a lot to think about as well. And I thought about this as you were talking, like, I think we get to the point too, this time of year when we are going on break, that it's a good time for us too, to think about, you know, our own professional learning and things that we're doing maybe over break and reading. And so I wanted to share a few things tonight with all of you, just so you have some things kind of to put into your pocket as you go into break as well. When we share this online, we'll also share the slide deck, so you have the links to these resources that are in these slides too. But one of the best places I think to go when you're looking for more information about Future Ready Schools and Future Ready Librarians is just the website, and also the page that focuses on us as librarians. And there's lots of information here. One of my favorite things probably to see are the things that are being posted all the time and updates. One of the biggest updates we had this year, of course, was the updated framework that now shows that literacy piece in there and things that we've talked about throughout the year and even last year as well. And so you can take a look at this and even get this either from like at a conference or your Follett rep, or even just by downloading it too. And so if you need this to share in your library or with your administrators or your community, it's a great place to go to be able to get that. Another place, one of my favorite things I think to look at are the great case studies that Follett has done. And it's neat to see, you know, not just the stories. And I think that all of you, you have case study on here, and Fran, you even have a great video that I love sharing. And these are really great for our continued learning, but also just really awesome information and inspiration too. So you can check those out on there. You can also get a digital badge or sticker for your email signature, for your blog. I love these, but I really love these. I have this on my email signature, and you can even print them off as stickers to share with your librarians and community. So these are really fun, and it's a great thing to put that to support that we are Future Ready Librarians on the things that we do. A couple things, though, that hold a lot of our resources when we're looking at this, and just looking back to it, you know, the last 2 years of this webinar series as we wrap up the last one for 2018 is this Symbaloo that has all of the webinars, the poster that I just shared, the stickers, the website, just all kinds of things on here that really will continue that learning. And one of my favorite places to go, and we're adding things to these collections all the time, is this collection set by Destiny. And it's really neat because we have one for each one of the wedges. And so resources are being put into here and shared. And these are a great place to go to be able to just further your knowledge of whatever you're looking at within those wedges as well. We also have a couple Padlets that have really good resources. And so if you're one that uses Padlet or you have things to share, please feel free to share these. These are just great crowdsource places to share resources. And one of the neatest things I think that came out of our Fall Institutes for Future Ready Schools is this Padlet. And when we were in Illinois, one of the librarians came up to me and she said, I just love everything I'm learning, and I know that I need to collaborate with my public librarian, but just tell me exactly what that looks like. And so this is a place that just ideas are being shared all the time, and just little, you know, tidbits of information and ideas and projects that people are doing. And again, please feel free to share your stories too, because that's what makes us all better. As librarians, we're such great sharers and collaborators, and so this is a great place to be able to do that. We also have our awesome Future Ready Librarian Facebook page, and I heard this mentioned a couple times tonight, and I love the ideas being shared on here. One thing that is really great is that you can search this group, and so over on the left-hand side, kind of three-quarters of the way down, you'll see that search box. And so when you're looking for ideas, like Fran mentioned, you know, looking at how we're marketing our resources, you can type in there what you're looking for and be able to find those ideas as well. Our group is great. We're almost to 20,000 people, which is amazing. And it's just a place that is so supportive and just great to get ideas and resources, but a place to note that we're never alone. It's, I think, one of the things that I love the most about what we have in our community. Also, using Instagram, just using that Future Ready Libs, you can now follow a hashtag in Instagram, and so search that up and you can follow it. And I love visual things and to see what people are doing, and so lots of good examples. And of course, on Twitter, like I said in the beginning of our webinar, the Future Ready Libs hashtag, this great conversation going on, but also the one that we've had for a long time, TL Chat. Also follow Future Ready. We have a hashtag for Future Ready, but we also have a Twitter, of course, and the conversation on there is so important for us as librarians, and it's one too for us to be part of. And so share our stories on there so administrators and teachers and others can see also the great things that we're doing as librarians. I wanted to share just a couple things too. One thing that is going on right now is the Future Ready School Film Festival. There is a link in this slide that we'll share with you too when we share the webinar online. This is something though that you can go and you can read more about it, a great new project. And this must be submitted by February 10th, but we still have plenty of time. And so check that out too. As we also wrap up 2018 and all the great things we've done as Future Ready librarians and as Future Ready schools, I just wanted to thank everybody that is involved too. Of course, my partner, Mark Gray, and all of our thought partners and different collaborators that we have. We just really thank you for being part of this. And we thank every librarian within our country and around the world. We have people that are joining these conversations and the great things that we're doing and really the difference that we're making. And so we're all doing amazing things, and just keep sharing the story and keep making a difference, because this is what is truly making a difference for our kids and for their future and the future of education. So we thank all three of you for coming. I can't wait to see you in the new year, and I hope that we stay connected and every one of us has a really great holiday. So have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you in 2018.